It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, a brand new week to begin the end of May. It is Memorial Day Monday, May the 28th, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. That's where you go if you'd like to jump in the chat room and participate in the merry, madcap, multimedia, wacky, zany, real-time extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Monday through Friday. If you do that, if you pick out a screen name and a password, you'll be met immediately by the early arrivers, namely Anatole and Squeaky and VT Blom, and of course capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran in both senses, chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a spacing guild master, has chosen not to fold space and become man cave. Although we've got a lovely photo of the man cave in the chat room at the moment. I told Sparky a little bit ago that, by Jove, that thing looks like it needs... It looks like the kind of thing that is a world-class barbecue joint. That's what the man cave looks like. Mm-hmm. Just needs a couple of old beer signs hanging out front and maybe some naked light bulbs strung along the front and maybe the smoke of a smoker pouring out by you. It's right there. It's the total package, the man cave. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, we are working toward the end of the month of May. And it was right warm here, but then we got a nice little shower a little bit ago right now here in the fabulous Horn Studios. It is 76 and a half degrees Fahrenheit, and looking out the Horn color weather window, I can see that it's a little overcast, but still daylight outside. Yes, complicated weather forecast, courtesy of the Horn Meteorology Department. Mm-hmm. At the beginning of the program, we do the same thing every night. We extend thanks. And thanks go out this evening to our subscribers, Philip, down in Texas. Thank you, Philip. And thank you to Charlene in Rhode Island. And thank you to Smitty down in Florida. Thank all three of you, as well as Randy in PA. And Sharon. Thank you, Sharon. And thank you very kindly to Harold, President and CEO of the... Secret Open Carry Happy Trails Roundup Society, Sodstress. Thank you, Harold. Our subscribers managed to knock down about a week's worth of broadcasting every month. Support for a week's worth of broadcasting, and thank you very, very much indeed, all six of you today. And I wish I could say that we were into fundraising-free broadcasting. We should have been on Friday, but we struggled all month long. And so we've got $210 to go. Sorry. $210 to go to finish May's fundraising and qualify for the May version of Ralph's Trash Fitzwalker Stan Challenge. it goes up a little bit every month that we meet our monthly fundraising goal. So we've got $210 to go in fundraising. We have birthday wishes to send out. Happy birthday to Michael in Madison, our friend of long standing. And unless I'm wrong, Michael may no longer be... Did I read that right, Michael? Are you there? You're not a 30-something anymore? My eyes are weak. My knees are blind. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, happy birthday. Happy birthday, Michael. Every one is a good one. So it is Memorial Day, and it's Moran Monday, and well, the Moran in chief certainly lived up to his reputation. It being Memorial Day, I'm going to forego the Calliope. But the fact of the matter is, I can't recall a time when a president has sent out an official White House statement on Memorial Day that was primarily that was primarily geared toward praising himself. We really do have a narcissist in the White House, the real kind. It's not an insult, it's a diagnosis. Although I'm not a psychologist and I don't play one on the radio. But it really was pretty gross to see how he tweeted how all the dead soldiers would be so happy to see what he's doing in America today. It still gives me makes my liver quiver just to think about it. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, letting us know that we are hot and true on both streams for this Memorial Day Monday. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, very much indeed. How can I put this? I don't run around looking for validation of my lack of faith in supreme beings. But isn't this the second Memorial Day when Cadet Bonespurs has laid a wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown? And as such, isn't this the second year, the second Memorial Day, when a great bolt of lightning has not reached down out of the sky and just... Bzzz, proving that there is no guiding moral force in the universe that takes care of evil and protects good and stands up for universal integrity or anything. Right. Yeah. I'm correct. Well, I mean, he did this year. Was he playing golf on Memorial Day last year? I can't remember if he laid a wreath last year. He was probably laying a porn star instead. But be that as it may, there was plenty of pushback against his deeply unreflective, self-indulgent tweet, or probably a twoop when you get right down to it. Did Melanoma see her shadow today? Did Melanoma come out with Dishonest Donnie to lay the wreath? Anybody? Because I don't remember seeing photographs of her. Thank you very kindly, Stephen, New York. I just wanted to say I'm so glad you're live. Well, I'm glad to be too. We did all our holidaying over the weekend, and I feel I have a hard time referring to Memorial Day as a holiday. I spent time thinking about the two veterans in my immediate past who did not come home, who, in point of fact, died fighting the same kind of fascists that have taken over the United States today. And one of them is buried just a couple of miles up the road from me, and the other one is buried on a hillside that may very well collapse someday soon because they've mountaintop removed the living bejesus out of the mountain behind it. Both of them were members of the United States Army. One made it all the way through the siege of Bastogne and was killed in January 1945, a couple of weeks before that. My mother, who was very close, and she was his, he was actually just a few years older than she, but he was her uncle. He was the youngest child of he was the youngest child of my great-grandfather. And he a couple of weeks before Christmas, my mother had received a letter from him saying, we've got the Nazis on the run, and I may be home for Christmas. Well, they did have the Nazis on the run, and they whipped the Nazis. And he came home in a box. But he gave that last full measure of devotion to stop the spread of global fascism. And that is not a sacrifice I take that I take lightly. And I was raised to revere it with every fiber of my being, and I do. He made it to January 1945. My uncle, my father's big brother, he made it to, I think it was October 1944. He had been in the military since 1942. He had risen in rank. He had made it up to some form of sergeant. He was deployed subsequent to the Normandy invasion and went into an active theater of operations in September and was dead by mid-October. We have nothing more than family lore because all the records of his service were burned up in a military warehouse fire, I think in St. Louis back in the 1970s. But we have family lore that says that he actually had a survivable wound, but the supplies of penicillin were diverted to units that needed it more. And so when his wound became septic, he eventually died. But he was in some sort of action to the east of Paris toward the German border. I looked it up on Google Earth one time as close as I could figure. And it just looks like a European wood. As I've said before, my generation has had nothing asked of it. And so, I didn't serve in the military. But I'm surrounded by ancestors who did. And so I offer all that I have to offer my reverence for the sacrifices that those who did not come home make, and this is a holiday for remembrance of those who did not return from our various and sundry wars. Veterans Day for all veterans is in November. This is the day for those who did not return from our various and sundry wars. And it goes back to the Civil War and the urge of the families of fallen Confederates to go and decorate the graves of dead traitors. But the idea caught on, and eventually, it seemed kind of wrong for the relatives of the traitors to be going and decorating graves, and the relatives of the people who saved the Republic not to be. So, you know, you don't really wish people a happy Memorial Day. Or at least I don't. But I hope somewhere along the way you've had time to reflect, because, well, most of us probably have somewhere in our family history someone who did not come home. A world that went on without them. A world that was changed, perhaps, by their absence. So I hope you have had a reflective Memorial Day. But when we get a day off in this country, we do tend to celebrate. And I saw a good bit of it over the weekend. And maybe celebrating in their memory, maybe trying to enjoy what remains of this once great republic that they gave the last full measure of devotion for, maybe that's appropriate. Maybe a beer glass lifted in memory, in toast, is appropriate. So I hope you've had a good Memorial Day weekend. That having been said, well, thank you, Andy. Note coming in from Andy the Angry Jew. Subject line: wow. Laid a porn star in the ground and Groundhog's Day in the same sentence, and no cowbell. Am I the only one that caught that? What the? That's fucking hilarious, Bob. Well, look, you know, I'm not doing the program in front of a live studio audience, Andy. I got to rely on you and others like you to let me know that these things are you know, reaching their mark. Was I proud of last year he was probably laying a porn star instead of laying a wreath? Yes, I was proud of that. And since you've awarded it, yes, I'll take the cowbell. So thank you, Andy. Thank you very kindly. Lee asks the question, would Trump remember to put his hand over his heart without melanoma nudging him? I don't know. But I did get a, and I presume this was in regard to my question about melanoma. That no, Bob, she was not there. This is getting downright Soviet, the absence of melanoma Trump. Because the excuse about the kidney procedure, unless they, like, took out a kidney, which they didn't say they did, it really stopped holding water about 3 days after the alleged procedure. Did you think she went home to mom and dad? And by home, I don't mean back to Transylvania or wherever. I mean, wherever her chain migration parents are in the United States. Or back to the tacky penthouse. I don't know. Okay, thank you. Thank you for the confirmation to Jim. The Mill Persen fire, 9700 Page Boulevard, St. Louis, Missouri, and everything went up. And the records, service records of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of members of the armed forces were lost in that fire, I guess because, what, we were too cheap for microfilm? Yeah. Of course, I said most of us have someone we can look back on who did not come home from the war. Randy points out, except the Trump family. The Trump family has never given a drop of blood to the salvation of the Republic or the defense of the Republic. Or even the ill-advised wars of the Republic. Cadet Bone Spurs himself, of course, got 4 deferments while he was in Wharton, not being on the dean's list and not getting honors, despite the fact that he constantly lies about having done so, And then once he graduated, or they got tired of him and told him he had, he got one more deferment for those aforementioned bone spurs, and that means a total of 5 people who went to Vietnam in his place, some of whom, it's statistically impossible, did not wind up not coming back. So, point taken, Randy. Randy says, like the song goes, those who give the orders are not the ones to die. Rich man's war, poor man's fight. Okay, thank you, Sparky. Sparky says, melanoma Trump is MIA, Bob. Well, she may be MIA, or she may be drafting her D-I-V-O-R-C-E. One does not know. But what we do know is she's, as we say here in the hills, right scarce. Lee with a note says, I guess cooking's on your schedule. Well, I got the cooking over with yesterday. But because it's Memorial Day and I know that you know history, I offer some thoughts. This month has seen a lot of discussion about patriotism, the flag, freedom, and history. What I write next is nothing new to you. Memorial Day was originally Decoration Day. It was created to remember the Civil War dead. While there are those who argue that the Southern states simply lacked freedom, what they feared was losing the freedom to own people. I must note that it is not common for the people who lose a war to fervently insist on holding events about that war, go figure. After the loss, one would expect the loser to accept the result. That does not seem to be the case here. People who look like they could have been slaves if the war went the other way are treated as less than other people. This brings me to Colin Kaepernick. Patriotism. Colin Kaepernick knew what rights are given to him. One of those rights is to protest. The flag. Colin Kaepernick uses the opportunity of the national anthem to bring attention to an issue. It is not disrespectful because his action is neither illegal nor disruptive. And as a person who attended a graduation where a proud parent blasted an air horn after their child's name was spoken, I recognize disruptive. Freedom. This is the one that is most misunderstood. My freedom does not end when you dislike my choice or action. Freedom is not unlimited. Anyone is allowed to express ideas and words that you do not like. Inciting violence should not be considered free speech, but is often tolerated. Colin Kaepernick is not even questionable here. He acts differently and is willing to discuss why. If we cannot hear an opposing view, then there is no freedom. Well put. Well put, Lee. Thank you very kindly. And beyond the many possible meditations on Memorial Day, it seems, from where I stand, that one story has dominated the headlines more than any other. Once again, it's a story that here at the Horn I mentioned long before it apparently reached the national zeitgeist. Oh, let me back up. We got to back up. Ron and Raleigh, subject line, wow. Hey, Bob, what kind of chutzpah does it take for Cadet Bonespur's first class to lay... Really? You think he made it to first class? I was thinking he was more third class. What kind of chutzpah does it take for Cadet Bonespur's first class to lay a wreath on Memorial Day? Do you even think the irony of his action crosses what passes for his mind? Oh, I'm sure the first time they told him that he had to go and lay a wreath, he was like, I didn't even know wreath was a woman's name. Is she hot? Sorry. You can't encourage me, Andy, okay? But, no, irony. Ron, irony does not exist in the hollowed-out spaces that have been left behind by the Spyro Keats in what passes for his mind. There is, you know, look, really, we have a guy in the White House now who is a memorable line from a kitschy science fiction film. There is no Memorial Day. There is only Trump. There is no wreath. There is only Trump. There is no America. There is only Trump. You know, Zool. So, I mean, from where I stand, no, I'm sure he's quite certain that he actually went. Look, this is a guy who said that he had made many sacrifices. If there was any justice, the Twitterverse would have been filled with people tweeting at him today about his sexual Vietnam. I mean, who does that? Well, Trump does that. The walking idiot. But there's nothing. There's nothing to him but his inflated sense of self. Okay, back to the topic at hand. Like I said, I managed to share. I mean, it's not like I. It was a news story, but I made mention of it before it was really getting a lot of talk, or I was seeing it in social media, about the almost 1,500 kids that the Office of Refugee Resettlement lost.
We don't know where they were. We gave them an apple and a roadmap and told them good luck.
So, just noting that part. But the story has captivated a certain, it's gained enough gravity that it's gotten a lot of attention. It's gotten enough attention that right-wing freaks are busily trying to discount it. And it runs in tandem, and it's important that these two stories remain separate but parallel. With what we know to be the Trump policy, it was not the Obama administration policy, hell, it wasn't even the Bush administration policy, of ripping babies out of the arms of their mother at the border and separating them. The 1,475 missing children are different from the ripped away babies insofar as the 1,475 missing children arrived at the border as unaccompanied minors. And they were then sent by Border Patrol ICE into the care, custody, and control of ORR, which is not part of Homeland Security, but is in fact part of Department of Health and Human Resources. It's important that we keep those two things distinct and separate. Because it had been the policy that ORR, once they had these children in their care, custody, and control, did not communicate with ICE. And that was the state of the law up until the middle of this month. All right? A couple of weeks ago, and this is going to... This is going to become important. About 2 weeks ago, the ORR, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, over at DHHR, based on what I've been able to find out, signed a memorandum of understanding with ICE, saying that where the two had not communicated before, now they will. So let's say they find one of those 1,475 kids that they have misplaced. Well, those were refugees. Those were children seeking refugee status who may or may not be in the country within the meaning of legally. depending upon the interpretation being given by the Trump regime to the law in question. So now that ORR can freely communicate with ICE, they can say, hey, we found the missing kid from Guatemala. Kid's here illegally. Go get him. Go get her. And ICE can then go and round up the child and put him in one of our for-profit concentration camps. And that's another thing. Let's stop playing the same Orwellian game. At least let's stop using the Orwellian language of the federal government in this regard. If you have prisons, and those prisons are a congregation of people who are all pretty much, they all pretty much have one thing in common, say a language, or a regional origin. These aren't detention facilities. Detention facilities are Orwellian. These are concentration camps. Just like Guantanamo Bay is a concentration camp. The sooner we understand that the government of we the people, trying to form that more perfect union, is using American taxpayer dollars to run concentration camps, the sooner maybe we will be a little bit more motivated to end them. Okay, can we do that? But surrounding both of these parallel running stories, there is a response that I have seen particularly on our side of the ideological aisle. And it mostly goes something like this. I can't believe we're doing this. We're better than this. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I get shrieking, hopping up and down mad when I see something like that. It makes me sad. Because, see, here's the thing. We're not better than this because we're doing this. And to that, you know, to whatever contingent there is within the Horn Family Community Congregation that says, oh, this all started under Barack Obama, Bruga, Bruga, Bruga. No, it didn't. Starts under George W. Bush. In fact, the order that sets up the for-profit concentration camp system, and that's the other thing. We're not even running the concentration camps with, you know, government-level accountability. The concentration camps are being run on a for-profit basis. One of those concentration camps is the T. Don Hutto concentration camp in Taylor, Texas. If you were somehow able to miraculously find an archive of this program going way back, probably, oh my God, maybe even as far back as the bad old days of me broadcasting in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, that's the first time that the T. Don Hutto concentration camp got on my radar. And it was awful then, and it remains awful to this day. And it's been awful all along. It was awful under a dim leader during the Reign of Error. It was awful during the Barack Obama administration when, from time to time, the Obama administration actually tried to take on ICE and the Border Patrol thugs. and it's getting more awful by the minute here in Trump-merca, where there is no America, only Trump. Jim with a note says, Office of Resettlement, yes, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, ORR. Jim says, next, Office of Race and Resettlement, then Fiscal, Ethnic, and Medical Resocialization Office. Sound familiar? Please share. I did. Thank you, Jim. Yes, it does. But when I began seeing, and I've seen a good bit of it, you know, we're better than this. No, we aren't, and no, we never have been. And let me emphasize that last part. No, we never have been. I want to share something with you. It's not a long read, the whole story is actually long, but I'm not going to read the whole thing to you or at you. Just the first couple of paragraphs. It was many years ago. The town was the most honest and upright town in all the region round about. It had kept that reputation unsmirched during three generations, and was prouder of it than any other of its possessions. It was so proud of it and so anxious to ensure its perpetuation that it began to teach the principles of honest dealing to its babies in the cradle, and made the like teachings the staple of their culture thenceforward through all the years devoted to their education. Also, throughout the formative years, temptations were kept out of the way of the young people so that their honesty could have every chance to harden and solidify and become a part of their very bone. The neighboring towns were jealous of this honorable supremacy and affected to sneer at the other town's pride in it and call it vanity, but all the same they were obliged to acknowledge that the town was in reality an incorruptible town, and if pressed they would also acknowledge that the mere fact that a young man hailed from that town was all the recommendation he needed when he went forth from his natal town to seek for responsible employment. But at last, in the drift of time, the town had the ill luck to offend a passing stranger, possibly without knowing it, certainly without caring. For the town was sufficient unto itself, and cared not a rap for strangers or their opinions. Still, it would have been well to make an exception in this one's case, for he was a bitter man and revengeful. All through his wanderings during a whole year, he kept his injury in mind and gave all his leisure moments to trying to invent a compensating satisfaction for it. He contrived many plans, and all of them were good, but none of them was quite sweeping enough. The poorest of them would have hurt a great many individuals, but what he wanted was a plan which would comprehend the entire town and not let so much as one person escape unhurt. At last, he had a fortunate idea, and when it fell into his brain, it lit up his whole head with an evil joy. He began to form a plan at once, saying to himself, "That is the thing to do. I will corrupt the town." 6 months later, he went to the town and arrived in a buggy at the house of the old cashier of the bank about 10 at night. He got a sack out of the buggy, shouldered it, and staggered with it through the cottage yard and knocked at the door. A woman's voice said, "Come in." And he entered and set his sack behind the stove in the parlor, saying politely to the old lady who sat reading the Missionary Herald by the lamp, "Pray keep your seat, madam. I will not disturb you there. Now it is pretty well concealed. One would hardly know it was there. Can I see your husband a moment, madam?" "No, he was gone to Brixton and might not return before morning." "Very well, madam, it is no matter. I merely wanted to leave that sack in his care to be delivered to the rightful owner when he shall be found. I am a stranger. He does not know me. I am merely passing through the town tonight to
discharge a matter which has been long in my mind. My errand is now completed, and I go pleased and a little proud, and you will never see me again. There is a paper attached to the sack which will explain everything. Good night, madam. The old lady was afraid of the mysterious big stranger and was glad to see him go, but her curiosity was roused, and she went straight to the sack and brought away the paper. It began as follows. To be published, or the right man sought out by private inquiry, either will answer. The sack contains gold coin weighing 160 pounds, 4 ounces. Mercy on us, and the door not locked. Mrs. Richards flew to it all in a tremble and locked it, then pulled down the window shades and stood frightened, worried, and wondering if there was anything else she could do toward making herself and the money more safe. She listened a while for burglars, then surrendered to curiosity and went back to the lamp and finished reading the paper. I am a foreigner, and am presently going back to my own country to remain there permanently. I am grateful to America for what I have received at her hands during my long stay under her flag, and to one of her citizens, a citizen of this town, I am especially grateful for a great kindness done me a year or two ago. Two great kindnesses, in fact, I will explain. I was a gambler. I was a ruined gambler. I arrived in this village at night, hungry and without a penny. I asked for help in the dark. I was ashamed to beg in the light. I begged of the right man. He gave me $20. That is to say, he gave me life, as I considered it. He also gave me fortune, for out of that money I have made myself rich at the gaming table. And finally, a remark which he made to me has remained with me to this day, and has at last conquered me, and in conquering has saved the remnant of my morals. I shall gamble no more. Now, I have no idea who that man was, but I want him found. And I want him to have this money, to give away, throw away, or keep, as he pleases. It is merely my way of testifying my gratitude to him. If I could stay, I would find him myself, but no matter, he will be found. This is an honest town, an incorruptible town, and I know I can trust it without fear. This man may be identified by the remark which he made to me. I feel persuaded that he will remember it. And now my plan is this. If you prefer to conduct the inquiry privately, do so. Tell the contents of this present writing to anyone who is likely to be the right man. If he shall answer, I am the man, the remark I made was so-and-so, apply the test. To wit, open the sack, and in it you will find a sealed envelope containing that remark. If the remark mentioned by the candidate tallies with it, give him the money and ask no further questions, for he is certainly the right man. But if you shall prefer a public inquiry, then publish this present writing in the local paper with these instructions added, to wit, 30 days from now, let the candidate appear at the town hall at 8 in the evening, Friday, and hand his remark in a sealed envelope to the Reverend Mr. Burgess, if he will be kind enough to act, and let Mr. Burgess here and then destroy the seals of the sack, open it, and see if the remark is correct. If correct, let the money be delivered with my sincere gratitude to my benefactor thus identified. And that's the setup to an absolutely classic piece of American literature that dates back to 1899. A time when this country was also in the grips of rapacious avarice and greed. A time referred to by some as the Gilded Age. That term was coined by Twain himself. And he did not mean it as a compliment. A time when this country was ready to strike out and commit bloodshed and warfare, all in the firm conviction that it was acting with the absolute as the absolute right arm of God. A time when there was no one would question a statement like, "America is a Christian nation." And the man that corrupted Hadleyburg caused quite a stir. And it was Twain's own attempt at a warning to a self-satisfied, self-congratulating people regarding the wages not of sin, but of sanctimoniousness. Because not to ruin the story, my God, I'd be surprised if there was a single member of the Horn Family Community Congregation who has not read it. But it operated, the plan operated as its deviser insisted. And Hadleyburg, which had as its seal and its motto, "Lead us not into temptation," in the aftermath was healed. And the motto changed to "Lead us into temptation." But you see, that self-sighted, or that self-satisfied, self-congratulatory sense of sanctimony was the undoing of the town, and the town stands as a metaphor for the entire United States of America in 1899 in the eyes of an aging Mark Twain who had grown more and more disillusioned with the prospects of his country. This is also the time during which he's writing The Mysterious Stranger, Letters from the Earth, and generally despairing of human nature. Not because he had simply become despaired because he was old, but because the life he had lived had led him to that despair. He recognized a country that was not good then, just as I tell you, we are not good now. Do good things happen here? Are there individual acts of kindness? Absolutely. And when the woman opens the door to the stranger, you'll notice she says, "Come in. It's unlocked." No one locked their doors in Hadleyburg, for they were all virtuous. And yet we know from the story that someone in Hadleyburg had already provided grave offense to the stranger. So they were not as good as they thought they were. Twain sort of hid his story behind a fig leaf. He wanted it seen as a satirical replay of the Garden of Eden story, but he's also writing it during the time of the Spanish-American War. And among other things, he writes the war prayer after he hears news of the atrocities committed by the American military in the Philippines. He had to be careful of his reputation, Twain did, because, well, he was revered as an elder statesman and very nearly to a poet laureate. But the fact of the matter is, he recognized in the United States then what we, if we have the courage to look at it, can recognize about the United States now. We are not better. Than to tear children from their mother's breasts. We're not better than that. Because you see, Donald Trump lost the popular vote by 3 million votes, but he got enough Electoral College votes to make him the president, so that means that there are tens of millions of American citizens who are perfectly content to have babies ripped from their mother's breasts. Because I assure you, the maggots are not marching in the streets demanding that Donald Trump stop this evil business. Oh no. Not at all. Take, for instance, what happened over on CNN. For reasons that are well past my comprehension, someone at CNN pays good money, and that good money comes from the money they make from advertisers. And the advertisers, in turn, get the money from you and me who purchase their products. They pay good money to a man who got thumped out of the Senate by a wider margin than a whole lot of incumbents ever have. I'm talking here about Rick Sanctum Santorum, noted fetus fondler. He's a commentator. He's a paid commentator over at Chicken Noodle News. And on the program that they have on the weekends, a little thing called State of the Union. Isn't that clever? Rick Santorum, family values Republican, Rick Santorum, who chooses life, Rick Santorum, who has all the regard in the world for a little wad of tissue that you couldn't even pick out with the naked eye, well, he's not so worked up about 1,475 missing post-born children. I mean, some children are more equal than other children, preferably the precious little fetuses.
Stunningly immoral and cruel. So whoever started it, this president and this administration has the power to stop it. And to Bill's point about this president going the extra step through policy and the fact that we're having that some, particularly him, has a cavalier attitude. I want all of us to put ourselves in the place of those mothers or those fathers, or as Patty was, we're both mothers. I mean, I can't even dream of a situation where my son would be torn from my arms.
With all due respect, these
way.
Parents
but,
are putting their children in peril
still,
by putting them and coming across the border.
They may or may not.
You don't know their situation. Some it may just be an economic issue. There may be all sorts of reasons
Senator,
people come
to me,
here.
That's not the point anymore.
It is the point to discourage that behavior.
The point is that we have children's lives at stake here.
But the parents are putting their children's lives at stake. Let's get to the bottom line.
No, the point is that
the parents are putting these children.
That America has a moral obligation to those kids that is larger than what the parent may have done.
The moral obligation is to deter that type of activity.
And the children be damned? The
children cannot be damned.
You can
at some point, the parents have to take responsibility for their children.
We're going to use the children as a pawn, though.
At some point, parents have to take responsibility for their children.
Go ahead, you want to get in.
Well, I just say, one can believe that some of these parents may be behaving irresponsibly. One can also believe that as a matter of policy, it is unwise and cruel to take their kids away from them. And there are other ways you can punish.
We take kids away from parents who do illegal acts all the time, and we put parents in jail.
We don't lose.
There's a kernel of truth there. We do take children away from parents who do illegal acts all the time. In almost all of the instances where we take children away from their parents, it is because the illegal things the parents have done have put their children at risk through a violation of the law. This is not the case with the 1,475 children who were taken into custody by the Office of Refugee Resettlement. They were not taken into the care. They arrived here by themselves. Don't we remember back when the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christian, evangelical Republicans were hooting and hollering about how all those children that were fleeing countries where violence was so rampant because of policies largely put into place through the meddling and finagling of United States foreign policy. Don't we remember when the Republicans were shrieking that those were just little baby ISIS? Because I do. And to say that we're going to tear children away from their parents as a deterrent to other parents who might flee the same violence. Now let's remember for a moment that the frothy mixture here, Rick Santorum, let's remember that he is a devout Roman Catholic who is absolutely enamored of every little zygote that has ever formed and wants it to be compulsorily a baby. It's worth remembering that. He loves little fetuses so much that he brought a dead fetus of his own home and showed it to his children. That's why we refer to him as noted fetus fetishist and fetus fondler, Rick Santorum. But see, these babies are born already. The ones that got lost. And so, well, you know, they're also not real. What's the word I'm looking for here? Help me. White! And they can't contribute to any Republican campaigns. They can't compete with Koch brothers' money. And so consequently, they probably have less human worth than the combined value of their minerals, precious metals, and fluids of which they are comprised. And that ain't much. About 67 cents or so? Probably less since they're little. But, you know, Ecce Republican. And of course, Santorum says, yeah, the children weren't really lost. The families are just deadbeats who won't check in with the government. But the height of it was probably when he said, we lose people all the time in a lot of other government programs. Read an article today about the 2,264th human being we've lost in Afghanistan. Only we didn't lose them. They're just dead. In a desperately stupid war. But we're not better than this. We aren't. And I include myself. I'm not going to castigate anybody. I'm not going to sit here and say, no. I haven't written any letters to Joe Manchin or Shelley Moore Capito or Evan Jenkins. I haven't. I'm gonna, but I haven't. But we're not better than this. We're not better than this because this is happening. Now, granted, it's happened twice now because of presidencies that were allowed to exist even though the person who became president didn't actually win the election, but in between there were 8 years where the guy did. And while there was some pushback, there was not enough, obviously. But as the one speaker said at the beginning of the discussion, what matters is that Donald J. Trump is the president right now and has the power to end it. And since I've argued that we need to keep these two parallel tracks running parallel and not intersecting, let's make clear. The ORR stuff and the missing 1,400 kids out of tens of thousands, that happened in the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and the Trump administration. But we must be absolutely 200-proof crystal clear that the policy of ripping babies from their mother's arms is exclusively an executive administrative act of choice on the part of the Trump regime. No matter how desperately the twee hardcore progressives want to say, but Obama, it don't work. You can't. This is something that was cooked up in the foul, sulfurous, brimstone-laden mind of Stephen Miller, and put into practice by Kirstjen Nielsen, and before her, John Kelly. This is it. That part of it is Trump, and only Trump. And to argue anything else is to be both disingenuous and completely miss the damn boat. A couple of emails going back to Memorial Day. Darlene in Connecticut says, I'm glad you're on today, Bob. Well wishes to you and yours on Memorial Day. Thank you, Darlene. From one of the greatest, if not the greatest, presidential speeches ever made, I almost think the lines anchoring either side of Last Full Measure of Devotion are maybe even more poignant and imperative considering today's climate. That from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. Indeed. And it's hard to square that, because of course we're always told the troops are fighting for our freedom. It's hard to square that with a country that rips babies from their mother's arms for doing nothing more than showing up in an act of abject desperation, trying to get into this country so that those babies will have a chance to survive. As to my mention of Orwellian language, do you mean like Orwellian language like enhanced interrogation? Yeah, Ron, I mean exactly that. Flavio knew right away where I was going. The man that corrupted Hadleyburg, I fucking adore that story. Thank you. You do it justice. Thank you, Flavio. Steve in New York, I saw Frothy Mixture on a news show defend this policy. I wanted to literally beat him silly. I don't think you could take him somewhere he already is, Steve. Meanwhile, Steve points out, what the church actually teaches about immigration, and Bob, I have plenty of issues with Holy Mother Church, I know. Hint, Frothy Mixture doesn't follow it. The Catholic Catechism instructs the faithful that good government has two duties, both of which must be carried out and neither of which can be ignored. The first duty is to welcome the foreigner out of charity and respect for the human person. Persons have the right to immigrate and thus government must accommodate this right to the greatest extent possible, especially financially blessed nations. The more prosperous nations are obliged, to the extent they are able, to welcome the foreigner in search of the security and the means of livelihood which he cannot find in his country of origin. Public authorities should see to it that the natural right is respected that places a guest under the protection of those who receive him. That's from the Catholic Catechism, 2241. Then there's this. The second duty is to secure one's border and enforce the law for the sake of the common good. Sovereign nations have the right to enforce their laws, and all persons must respect the legitimate exercise of this right. Quote, political authorities, for the sake of the common good for which they are responsible, may make the exercise of the right to immigrate subject to various juridical conditions, especially with regard to the immigrants' duties toward their country of adoption. Immigrants are obliged to respect with gratitude the material and spiritual heritage of the country that receives them, to obey its laws, and to assist in carrying civic burdens. That also from the Catholic Catechism, 2241. Neither of which was apparent in anything that devoted hardcore Roman Catholic Rick Sanctum Santorum bro-fro mix blathered on CNN. Later on, and I'm not going to bother with this clip, he tried to walk it back a little bit, but because he's Rick Santorum, he just walked it deeper. Thank you for the kind words, George writing in. Pleased to hear you tonight. Thank you very kindly. As to the absence of melanoma, Clarence writes in, I have a theory about Mrs. Trump's disappearance. The kidney procedure happened the same week of the royal wedding. The mango maniac was not invited. I think the medical procedure was conjured up to keep Mrs. Trump, who was invited, from not attending. If the procedure is true, I wish her a safe and timely recovery. I put nothing past this disgraceful administration. Hadn't thought of it in that light, and I don't... Clarence, are you sure she was invited? Because she's the wife of the president, and it was decided by the Royal Office of Protocol that there would not be any heads of state. No, I mean, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable, but in this I see a lot more, shall we say, base motives. Because, see, it was bad enough when the Stormy Daniels stuff came out. Then it got worse when she found out that at the same time she was nursing an infant in arms, Barron, that he was romping with a Playboy playmate. And then at roughly the same time that she disappeared, the story appeared in the New Yorker magazine, or in New York magazine, not the New Yorker, but New York magazine, that posited that the Elliot Broidy $1.3 million payment to the playmate who had an abortion had actually been Broidy taking the fall for an incident in which Donald Trump had impregnated yet a third playmate. Remember that the subject of the non-disclosure agreement in both Broidy's alleged non-disclosure agreement and the Trump non-disclosure agreements are all named David Dennison. And I don't know about anybody else's law school experiences. You know, there are a lot of little catchphrases you learn in law school that sometimes sneak over into everyday practice. For instance, when you take real property class, just as a way of keeping things straight in learning about property transfers, law professors will refer to red acre and black acre and white acre and green acre, yellow acre, orange acre. Depends on how many acres you have to deal with, but different colors. But I don't remember anybody ever talking about David Dennison in any contracts class. But that's where that's the temporal parallel that sort of makes me go, But just to sort of tie things up with the the immigration story, we're not better than this. And if you have the stomach, go out. Put on a cyber condom and wander around the fetid, stinking sewers of the right-wing internet, and you'll find no sympathy whatsoever for children ripped from their mother's arms or for the mothers themselves. And other details emerged, and they were a couple of years old. I shared it on Facebook and Twitter. The Tidon Hutto concentration camp. Well, it has a bus. No, really. It has a prison bus that has nothing in it but infant carriers. Really. Car seats for little infant prisoners. I'm not kidding. They got that bus and they got the money to get that bus when the concentration camp for babies qualified as a... Hi, Mr. Orwell. You're just not going to go away this evening, are you? Daycare center. Really? That's not a joke. That's a thing, as Rachel Maddow says. We have car seat baby prison buses. You know, for transporting the little infant prisoners. And when I said, I remain convinced of the rightness of what I said last night about the issue. A country that imprisons babies is not circling the drain. A country that deliberately imprisons babies is doing the backstroke in the septic tank. We are not better than that. That is who we are. And these concentration camps dot the American Southwest. Number of them in Texas. Elsewhere, and they are run for the purpose of making profits for their shareholders. Hey, Madge, come here.
Yes, dear.
Madge, look. We got our dividend check from our investment in the private prison company that runs concentration camps for babies.
Oh, goody. Well, dear, what shall we spend it on?
Well, I say we reinvest it because that's a good dollar. That's a good dollar, that infant concentration camp dollar. Let's reinvest it so we can help them build more concentration camps for more babies.
Oh, you always knew just the right thing to do with our money.
Capitalism, yay. Aren't we just something? We're definitely something, but the something we aren't is better than that or that good. and we have gotten exponentially worse since January the 20th, 2017. Now, if I had Dr. Bill on the phone, he would probably be much better at what I'm about to assay than I am. But regardless, I'm going to take a run at it because I think it's somewhat important. I had a conversation earlier today. Oh, no, before I finish, I'm gonna share something with you. Texas Betsy brought this to my attention because she's done considerable work with the immigrant population down in Texas. She's volunteered working with some of the imprisoned children in the concentration camps and made me aware of this effort. This was posted over on Facebook. Asylum-seeking mamas and papas separated from their little ones, their babies and children, by the U.S. government at the border. What can you do? You can call, write, and importantly, go to the offices of your congressional representatives and your senators. Demand an end to this practice. You can write letters to the press, op-ed pieces, call radio stations, demonstrate. Demand an end to the practice of separating parents and children. You can help individual asylum-seeking moms and dads get out of detention. We're not talking about illegal immigrants here. People just sneaking across the border to come and swab our toilets, pick our lettuce. We're talking about people seeking political asylum. You know, that line about give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. Mm-hmm. We're talking about people fleeing entire regions and countries that are so shredded, so civically devastated, again, largely as a result of policies and meddling engaged by this country, that their only hope is to leave the disastrous situation because they are poor people, they are working people, and they do not have a means of changing the status quo in their country because the response to protest in their countries is to gun them down where they stand. So you flee before the firing starts. In the case of some of the lost children, the 1,475 who arrived here without parents, imagine for a moment, just a moment, putting your child on a bus or the back of a truck, your 10-year-old, your 11-year-old, your 6-year-old, hoping someone will look after them while you and the other parent, if they're both together, stay there wondering if they will ever see their child alive, but instead hoping that they're somehow ensuring that their child will live with or without them while they stay there to potentially absorb the gunfire. Take a moment and try to do that. And it'll break your heart if you do. I'm saying it to the wrong people because this community has empathy. This community has human compassion. It's the maggots. It's the maggots that you'd like to see actually ponder something like that happening to them. But nothing will happen to them because they are the elect. They are maggots. They are the good Americans. They're the Americans who don't protest the out of hand murder of young black men by not rising for the national anthem. No, by Jesus, they stand for the national anthem every goddamn time the first note's played. They're the good Americans who need to be here, not the Americans who need to leave, as Donald Trump said, because they don't want to stand for the national anthem. Anyway, you can help individual asylum-seeking moms and dads get out of detention by contributing directly to the Races Bond Fund, R-A-I-C-E-S Bond Fund. R-A-I-C-E-S is a nonprofit and has been not only representing asylum seekers, including children, including families, for years, but also helping bond them out. They've assisted asylum-seeking clients of mine, the original writer of the post says, asylum-seeking clients of mine for years. They are trustworthy. Here's an example. An immigration judge set a bond of $12,500 a couple of days ago for a woman in the Tidon Hutto concentration camp whose children were taken away from her by the U.S. government and who is currently detained incarcerated in that self-same concentration camp in Taylor, Texas. It's an outrageous amount, $12,500 bond. The bond goes to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. The profit from detention goes to private prison corporations. The trauma belongs to the family. The legal team representing this family did so without cost to the family. Do what you can, please. End the practice of separating children from their parents and help reunite this family and others. Share this, and I posted it over at my Facebook page, the writer says, but do not limit your efforts to sharing on Facebook. Confront your elected officials at every opportunity. This is who we are. We don't like to admit that the uglier aspects of who we are is who we are. But a decent regard for facts compels us so to do. And people make lawyer jokes. But there are lawyers who work for a pittance in nonprofits representing these immigrants for free. Think about, by comparison, think about the lawyers who stand between disaster and any hope at all of a decent life. These immigration lawyers, most of them in the American Southwest, but elsewhere as well. And those organizations exist on something, a molecule above vapor. They are in constant dire financial straits. While meanwhile, there's another legal nonprofit called Liberty Council, run by a grifter by the name of Matt Staver, who uses the same law to be a nonprofit and has a multi-million dollar budget whose only goal is to stop women from being able to control their bodies and make sure that a couple of guys can't pick out a fucking China pattern. Yeah. And they are much more richly supported than the scraping by on the last thread of a moth-eaten, dry-rotted shoestring groups that fund immigration lawyers. You want proof that we are that way, that we are not better than that? The existence of Liberty Counsel versus the day-to-day, hand-to-mouth existence of the immigration lawyers is a portion of that proof. Maybe it seems an odd juxtaposition to talk about this immigration issue on the same day as we began the conversation by talking about Memorial Day. But I go back to what Darlene in Connecticut said. The words are maybe more poignant and imperative considering today's climate, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. I'm going to hazard a guess that most of the people who have died in America's wars, most of the people who have died under the colors in America's wars, I'm not talking about the 2 million Vietnamese that we slaughtered. They don't get Memorial Day. But I'm guessing that the countless numbers of people who have died in our armed forces in our wars would not say that they died so that some goddamn brute could rip a baby from its mother's arms at the American border. And so, taking Darlene's admonition to heart, yes, a country that descends to the place where we have descended, arguably renders the sacrifices of those honored dead in vain. And that is a deep dishonor. And it approaches something on the order of tragedy. So at the halfway point of the program, we'll take a little break, sort of reboot and come back and address some other issues because, well, there is some more Ann Monday stuff out there. Thanks, everybody, for the kind words about being here this evening. I appreciate it. Randy said Randy Rhodes probably took a powder today. Carol Booley probably took a powder. Carell, I support you because you take your job at least somewhat seriously. Well, I'm glad I got the at least, I think. So, yeah, let's take a break and come back and look at some of the madness of the rest of the news stack, shall we? This is listener-supported Conversation Radio. It's Memorial Day 2018. I'm Bob. This is The Horn.
You said it was your duty. Yours to fulfill. You joined the peacetime army. It's no longer a drill. Take a look around. If you have any doubts, to free the world from tyranny is what this is about. And they say it's gonna take some time. Every day there's one less of you in line. You are the sons and daughters of the working class, ordinary people with a monumental task. But the world isn't patient, knowing little of your pain. They hold you to a standard themselves they can't sustain. And at home, the pundits start to spin. Politicians and oil men cash in. Widows in office cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. The rich man's war and the poor man's fight. God bless your blood. God bless your sacrifice. God bless the innocents that died in the fight. There's hell on the horizon, a fire on the earth. Time to tell the truth. What is this worth? And the children that today are playing games. Conscription, tomorrow calls their names. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Widows and orphans cry themselves to sleep at night. Corporations get in line, there's contracts to write. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight. Rich man's war and a poor man's fight.
Twenty-nine minutes before the hour, before the third hour of this program. It is Memorial Day, Monday, the 28th of May, 2018. This is The Horn. Yay, this program is live, okay? It is absolutely live. This isn't a rehash or a repeat or a re-anything. And let's run over and check in on the phones. I don't know for sure, but I'm almost willing to bet this might be our buddy Matt in Humboldt. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
Hot diggity. Hi, Matt.
Howdy doody.
I'm doing well.
How'd the old smoked turkey turn out?
That's nice of you to ask. I'm great. I'm giving myself a C.
A C?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was quite tasty and quite edible, but sometimes I engage my passions before I engage my brain. And what didn't dawn on me was that I was not going to get a boneless turkey breast, which is exactly what I got. And I actually went out and looked around and couldn't even find one, you know, raw. So my plan for wrapping it in a bacon mat sort of fell to pieces, because you can't make a bacon mat big enough to completely wrap a turkey breast that still has the bone in it. Damn it.
So it was
not pretty. And I had these visions of just slicing perfect slices of beautiful smoky bacon wrapped turkey and sort of fanning them out on a plate, kind of like a deck of cards across the bays. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that didn't happen. So instead, it's been more a matter of peeling the bacon away and carving at the turkey with as sharp a knife as I can find, as best as I can do it. And it is. It's really good. I have invented a new kind of turkey sandwich.
Okay.
And it's really delicious.
All right.
The thin sliced turkey on very lightly toasted sourdough. I'm a sourdough guy.
A sourdough roll or
sourdough loaf. We can get them in Walmart and Kroger's over here. It's from the California Sourdough Company of all places. You know, which is probably based in like Eureka Springs, Arkansas or something. I don't know.
I think it's down in the Bay Area.
But it's a really tart.
We used to have a bakery baking company up here called Big Loaf. And they made regular bread, whole wheat and white, and I think they made some rye and pumpernickel. And
well, this is the best sourdough I can get my hands on around here. It toasts up real well. It's thinly sliced, and it's actually got a nice tart tanginess to it, which I like. And it's chewy.
Mm-hmm.
So lightly toasted that with a smear of mayonnaise, and turkey sandwiches beg for mayonnaise. And
yeah.
And then the turkey, and the other side, while the toast is still hot, gets a thin slice of either Gouda or Havarti.
Okay.
And then sliced tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
And sliced avocado.
Right.
And sliced onion.
Mm-hmm.
Thin, paper thin. And
right.
Then, and this is what makes it different. Sliced pickled beets.
Hmm.
It was fan-freaking-tastic, Matt.
Something else, huh?
Yeah.
Did you use any of the bacon?
No. The bacon gets too much of a workout. The way it, you know, because it wasn't all rolled up pretty, so it just sort of did its bacon thing, and I'm melting, and got all sort of spastic looking. So I peeled the bacon, stuck the turkey back in, and let it get a nice uniform golden color.
Oh, okay, yeah. So yeah. Yeah, that sounds real good. We have a little, there's a place down here. It's just about, maybe 5 or 6 blocks from my front door. And I like to go over there. It's Arcata Pizza and probably it's kind of like your secret sandwich society.
Yeah, yeah.
And they make these BLTs with avocado, and that is which are just something else.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah, and the their bacon is. It's just, they cook it. It's just perfect, you know, just the right amount of chewy.
Yeah, I can't stand bread that just goes to mush in your mouth.
Right. Well, I was thinking about the bacon.
Oh, and the well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like.
Sometimes if you overcook bacon, it curls up and then it gets kind of
crispy,
you know,
and hard, and that's not. And that's more or less what happened to the bacon on the bird.
I see. So you think maybe next time get one without the bone in it?
No, I couldn't find any of those. So instead, I sat down while the turkey breast was smoking and started running over, because I know how to bone a chicken, but a turkey's a slightly different affair because it's bigger. And I watched a couple of videos to figure out how to bone a turkey breast, and it's not going to be fun. And I'm hoping I'd complete, you know, there will be a counting of Bob's digits by the time I'm done boning my first turkey breast.
Yeah.
And frankly, I expect in about 15 seconds I'm going to get an email from some smartass in the horn community going, "Yeah, Bob's talking about boning turkey breasts, pervert."
Well,
how we operate here.
Well, eventually you'll get to be an expert boner.
Well, I didn't have to wait long now, did I, Matt?
No. and you don't even need a pill.
That's two. You know, you know that's the thing. You deliver.
I'm on a roll.
You are. You kind of deliver them dry there, and you know you're not. You don't know until the shiv's already too far in to be able to do anything about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, that's pretty cool. This is only my second time calling in, and two cowbells.
There aren't a lot of people that have gotten two cowbells in 30 seconds, Matt. Come on.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. So it must be doing something right. I was a little late to the party today. I caught you right at the time when when we started that clip with Rick Sanitarium.
Yeah. That's a hell of a thing to walk into.
Oh, God almighty. What are these new... What are these people...
Matt, don't try. That way lieth madness, okay? He is an evil, money-grubbing, sanctimonious ass. And any analysis beyond that is, you know, remember, this is a guy who, when he was running for president, what, in 2008, was it 8 or 12 when he fumbled and said, referred to the blah people.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. I remember that. And he was a real asshole when he was in the Senate too.
Oh yes, he was, and that's why the people of Pennsylvania threw him out of office in such convincing fashion.
Mm-hmm. And I distinctly remember not too long back, he made an ass out of himself about with respect to the parkland.
Oh yeah, and before that
and,
there
and it said and we they should the, instead of you know protesting and you know calling for change and gun laws and so forth, he said, well, these kids, what they need to do is learn CPR so that they can manage it themselves. Dave, what is it? His last name. The kid that's one of the main folks in the Parkland group.
Oh, I know. David Hogg. David Hogg.
Dave. Yeah, Dave Hogg. Dave Hogg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hogg. Hogg.
Hogg. Yeah, Dave Hogg. And he came out and just, you know, tore Sanitarium a new one. In not so many words, he basically just said, hey, well, you know, CPR is all, that's all fine and good, and kids should learn it, but when somebody's bleeding out, and they got a bullet wound in the head, and they're, you know, CPR's of no use.
No.
And so...
But see, I remember even before that, oh God, how many different times has he made an ass of himself? He doesn't make an ass of himself, he merely displays himself to be the ass that he is. I remember when he got caught, and he wasn't in Congress, he wasn't in the Senate, he was actually a paid, you know, he was a paid commentator on CNN, and I was actually there. I saw it happen in the little snack bar area of the Senate, in the Dirksen Senate Office Building, when he came down to meet and conspire with Senate Republicans in an effort to take people's health care away from them, and he got busted for it. But it wasn't enough to get him fired from CNN.
No.
You know, when you're on wingnut welfare, there is almost nothing short of goose stepping into the office in an actual SS uniform that will get you fired.
I'm not sure that even that would do the trick.
Well, it was enough for Jeffrey Lord, or close enough.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. Yeah, well,
I'm sorry you joined the program in progress right at the Sanctum Sanctorum frothy mixture moment, because that's just ugly, Matt.
It is, and the whole issue that you're talking about is just, it's just sick.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is.
I just cannot.
No, you're a decent human being, Matt, and therefore it defies your ability to comprehend. But I would only counsel, Matt, that do not mistake your inability to comprehend such massive inhumanity, such massive barbarity, such determined cruelty. Do not mistake your inability to comprehend that for the rest of the nation being the same way. Because I say this not as hyperbole, there is a segment of this country, and they prove it every day, and they are measured in tens of millions, who, if they were televising little immigrant children being brought up to a wall and shot with their mothers, would tune in and cheer. That is what a significant portion of this country is right damn now.
Yep.
And I'm not just imagining what Republicans are like. I'm basing this on the various and sundry news stories that I see on any given day. I got audio in front of me right this moment, Matt, of a white winger in Houston at a Jack in the Box restaurant via ABC 7 News. I'm going to play it here. The audio is clear enough. People will be able to hear it. You'll be able to hear it too. The guy goes to the counter in a snit over a hamburger coupon. Okay? That's what you're about to hear. That's what it's all about.
Okay.
And in Houston, Texas, if you can dare imagine it, there are people who speak with what we understand to be an Hispanic accent.
Sure.
I know it's going to come as a shock to all the weird little right-wing lurkers or whatnot, but, you know, there are people with Hispanic last names who have been in Texas longer than all the white people. Same thing for New Mexico, oddly enough.
Well, that's good. That's because it was part of Mexico.
And there are people who are here. Yeah.
What was it? 1848.
Thereabouts. Under the presidency of John Tyler, if I recall correctly. But there are people in Houston who are here legally who speak with Hispanic accents, but white-haired, white-bearded, old white dude. Well, if you don't sound just like him, you must not belong here. So that's where we pick up.
Yeah,
he's giving grief to a young woman who's making, at best, minimum wage, probably not working full-time hours. It is, after all, Texas, and workers have zero rights in Texas. And that's where we pick up the conversation.
Bob busted you back to where you came from. What did you fire down here?
What happened? What's wrong?
We can't get an order here. She told my son no.
Okay.
She lied her ass off.
She's going to give you the order.
No, she thought she could get away with it.
I checked the score. She's going to give you the order. Yeah. That's it.
And I see her dropping food in the sink and then putting it back in the basket right there.
Hey,
you're going to get fired. What's your name?
Okay, Maria's
her
name.
Maria.
Goodbye, Maria.
Okay, bye.
Goodbye. Buy you a ticket back to Mexico.
Now, Matt.
Yeah?
That man, if he was given an opportunity to watch a little immigrant mother and immigrant baby be tortured on live television would have popcorn and an ice-cold beer as he tuned in, okay? Let's be clear. Let's not beat around the bush.
Either that or he might even have his hand wrapped around his dick.
Well, I was kind of going, you went there. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think there are people who would be that way.
I think you're right. Because we have an obscene element of our body politic.
Yep.
Of our civic existence.
Yeah, I liked. I was listening to your the other night, Friday on the Front Porch, and I don't know if he's listening tonight, but more and more, I really appreciate Steve from Georgia.
Oh, Steve from Georgia Stan. Steve from Georgia Stan. All of our Steves are treasures, but Steve from Georgia Stan's a treasure.
From Georgia Stan. He came up with the term for some of these people that is pretty fitting. He called them hee-haws.
Well, yes. And, of course, that comes from, A, the noise that a jackass makes.
Yeah.
And, B,
and the TV.
And the old TV show. BR549, call now.
The TV show that I loved when I was a little kid. I would have watched that sucker religiously for several years.
Oh, it was on every weekend in my.
It was on CBS.
Well, it was syndicated, so it could have been on any given network, but it was on every weekend in my house.
Mm-hmm. Now we got it on the local CBS station.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. Hee-haws. I think he was talking about the one of the Republicans that was running for governor.
Georgia. Yeah.
The guy that was so conservative he was going to blow up regulations.
And the guy who was so conservative he pointed a shotgun at his daughter's alleged suitor in a campaign ad. Yes.
Yeah. And Steve said something like, "Well, yeah, and all these hee-haws around here are gonna run, not walk, to vote for him."
Well, Steve's been piling up some greatest hits for a while now.
That and the
piece of bubble gum from 1984 will live forever.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, we need to do sometime. I don't know. It would be a Herculean effort, I know, but we need to maybe go back through the archives and try to pull out some the greatest hits.
Steve's greatest hits, yeah.
No, not just Steve, just. From like the best of Friday on the Front Porch.
Oh God, that would, if we had a real live honest to God PR department, that would be a thing.
Oh man, because if we could put something like that together, that would be a Jim Dandy, because Billable Rick was in good was. In fine form the other night, too.
Well, Billable Rick always brings his A game. But we had, I don't know if Rick's listening, but when we were talking about the pool tables that he shoots in his billiards league on, and he was talking about the odd leveling job on the I got an email, didn't get to bring it into the program because it was right as the program was wrapping up, and I'm not sure if I can even find it now. Let's see, that was the 25th. Wait a minute here. I'll get to it. I'm almost to the 25th now. It takes a lot of... Oh, yeah, it was Darris. It was Darris who said, all slate tables can be flat. I was in that business. And I think that's what I was... that's kind of what I was getting at. And that somebody was sort of laying down on the job when it came to leveling up the tables.
Yeah. Well, it seemed like what Rick was describing was the floor that was
right. But you can, but even if you've got a bad floor, you can still level the table. The tables themselves have leveling mechanisms.
Oh, okay.
They have like, you know, feet with threads on them, so you can put a level on the surface. And you can manipulate those little threaded feet. I think this is maybe what Darris was talking about. Until you've actually, regardless of whether there's a wave in the floor or whatever, you can get the table level.
Right. Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I tried to play pool a couple of times.
Billiards on an incline just isn't much of a game.
Well, billiards when you can't see.
You know, that would probably throw a real wrench into the, because yes.
Yeah, it didn't work out so good.
No luck at the gun range either, I trust.
Yeah, I wonder how many blind people in Iowa have got or packing.
Oh my God.
Almost too scary to contemplate.
Well, I'm sure, you know, if you want to visit, I'm sure they'll be happy to give you a handgun at the border, Matt.
Yeah, God almighty. I wouldn't even know what the hell to do with it.
Maybe it's more disturbing that there are people who do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey Matt, it's good to hear from you, my friend. You have yourself a good evening, and for call number two, I'd say this was a pretty good effort on your part.
All right, well, I appreciate that. All right, well, we'll check you later.
All right, keep them honest up in Humboldt, will you?
Oh yeah, yeah. we'll try to keep their pot's legal here, so. We gotta.
Oh my goodness gracious! That it's just.
Little Humboldt gold.
Oh yeah, the Humboldt stuff, Matt. Back in the day, you know, every now and then somebody'd say, "I got some Humboldt," and you're like,
"Yeah."
Well, maybe it is, and maybe it's not, but that one word, Humboldt, carried quite the cachet.
Yeah, still does. So does train wreck.
Yeah, but the one I'm still waiting on is the one that Sparky showed me, the sour banana sherbet.
Oh yeah.
How can you not be intrigued by that?
Yeah, I was wondering about that. I mean
that's right up that's right up there. What I really want to try is some parsnip rhubarb kush.
Yeah, I still want to see the. This aquarium pump stirrup bong.
One of these days, I don't know if the technology permits, but we're going to have to get Jim to just draw up plans because that could be the greatest fundraiser that the Horn has ever done.
Yeah, I think I might be able to make it happen because I'm probably could find some people that make Actually, I do know some people that make pipes and bongs and things.
But we could only offer them in states where consumption and possession is legal. But everybody else would want one too. But yeah, that's nine or ten or 11 states, and most of them have a lot of horn community members in them.
I know. Yeah, that's true.
Washington, Oregon, right. California, Massachusetts, the D.C., New Mexico.
New Mexico or Nevada?
New Mexico. New Mexico's local.
Oh, New Mexico, too?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They got dispensaries and everything.
I didn't know that.
Colorado?
Colorado, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big thing in Colorado.
That's worth thinking about, and I'm glad you brought it to mind. Matt, you have a great evening, my friend.
All right.
Take care. Bye now.
Lighten the mood a little bit.
You certainly did. Later now.
All right.
Bye.
Later.
That's our buddy Matt in Humboldt. yeah, we were dealing with some pretty heavy stuff, so it's probably well that Matt did lighten things up a bit. And oddly enough, I did get an email about boning a turkey breast, but it wasn't filthy. There's hope for this community yet. Got a note from Flavio. Last year, after Thanksgiving, Festival Foods had bone-in turkey breast for sale, $7.34 for 10 pounds of turkey breast. I couldn't resist and bought one. They were on sale for a few days before being frozen, so we're in the cooler almost frozen. I tried to debone it, and it was a botch. It was freezing, and the knife I had was dull. So while I didn't hurt myself a couple of times, I almost did. And like I said, it was a botch. I was lucky to get away with 5 to 6 pounds and threw the boned parts away. I kept running my hands under warm water to warm them up again, and after each deboning attempt... At least you didn't... See, that's the thing. I think of it as deboning, but all the references I saw said boning. It's a word-knowing thing, I guess. It's a matter of learning. But, you know, the trick is thaw the damn thing out. And I imagine it is pretty cold, but... And then, you know, since it's raw poultry, you're probably going to have to, sanitize a 3-square-mile-wide area because it's America, and we can't help but produce poultry that's just a goddamn laboratory of pathogens. But, you know, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And that's not you, Flavio, that's me. So, sooner or later, but you gotta have a sharp knife. But I found a good video, and it shows you a very meticulous, and a lot of the work was done with a little paring knife. So maybe there's hope. Maybe that great goddamn big meat axe you were using was the wrong tool for the job, Flavio. I don't know. Note from Ron in Raleigh. It's the law. There's a scene in Deadpool 1 and 2 where Wade Wilson's blind landlord pulls her shooting iron, pointing it in the wrong direction. With a reference to... And by the way, never try to quote... Never try to cite Snopes to a white winger now, because they will immediately respond... Hey, George Soros! No, I'm not kidding. I wish I was. But Snopes checked and fact check. I'm waiting for the damn thing to load. Does Iowa grant gun permits to blind people? Reports about a 2011 change to Iowa's gun licensing rules in Iowa went viral after a mass school shooting in 2018. Claim, in Iowa, blind people are legally allowed to own and possess firearms. Rating, true. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's that. And this is not, this is not some sort of exegesis on things that people with special needs or disabilities should be precluded from, but... Yeah, I know. Just before I get myself in any deeper. Meanwhile, Flavio has trod heavily upon the sensibilities of Ron and Raleigh. Threw the bone away? What in the name of all things holy did Flavio throw the bones away for? Turkey soup, for Jeebus' sake. I know. Turkey carcass soup. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Asa, who I can count on, I can count on to run the program into the gutter like, you know, like the rising and the setting of the sun. What's all this about deep boning a turkey? Have we run out of humans to fornicate with? Thank you. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. You restore my confidence in the low standards of this community. By the way, when we were talking about the missing melanoma a little bit earlier, Asa offered up a cowbell that I didn't get to in a timely fashion. Here's my take on melanoma's absence. I think following a lifetime of drinking Coke and a piss-poor diet, gonorrhea, Gaddafi, and see, that's where the cowbell comes in. The gonorrhea, Gaddafi, needed a kidney donor, and who better to extract it from than his own house slave? Cowbell. Definitely cowbell. I had a note from Charlene a moment ago. Charlene is a tremendous supporter of the program. And Charlene said, here's a $75 challenge. If it's met, when it's met, I will throw in another $25. Let's clean this up so Bob's free of the money nag for the last few days of the month. Thank you, Charlene. It would be nice to do Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday with no mention whatsoever of fundraising, except to say thank you to the subscribers. Thank you, Charlene. So here in the remaining 53 minutes of the program, there's a $75 challenge on the table. If it's met, that takes us to $150. Charlene will then kick in another $25. That's $175 and leaves us $35, $35 from finishing the month and meeting the Trash Fitzwalker Stand Challenge for the fifth consecutive month. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very much indeed. Nice note coming in from Glenn. Subject line, really, thanks. I had quite a weekend, says Glenn. Too busy for my taste. So you being on tonight was a pleasant and welcome surprise. You may not believe it, and you don't have to or anything, but it's the absolute truth. Notes like that are a big part of what makes all of this so special. It's an honor past expression for you to invite me through your speakers into your home or your car or your earbuds evening after evening after evening. And I love thinking, like I've said before, I love thinking about all the places this program is listened to. Sometime in the next 3 hours or so, this program will, to the best of my knowledge, for the first time, be downloaded on the island of Sicily. And I'm getting vicarious participation photos from that ancient piece of real estate. And that's I saw photos of Scylla and Charybdis today. And you could actually see the movement of the water that made the ancients think that there was some angry god or beast or whatever. And the only thing I don't have yet is a recording of the sirens. No, 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 not the ones that run up and down the road here, but it, you know what I'm talking about.
They were sirens.
Yes. This program's been, I remember when this program was listened to on Crete in Panama. And it is fitting to mention from time to time what an honor and a thrill and a joy it is to be brought into your lives and into your homes. Thanks, Jim. Jim says, I was glad to hear you tonight as well. I figured everybody knew I'd be here. It's a long holiday weekend, and by the time Monday rolls around, I got to get behind the microphone. And it's just, and I don't mean just, Agnes knows what I mean. We're here together, us two. And we had our family fun in previous days. Who am I kidding? We went out to Secret Sandwich on Saturday evening, and it was so funny because I walked in the door and there was this sort of 80s punkish, new wave-ish rock and roll cover band, and it was funny because all the people of a certain age were like bobbing their heads back to the left, over to the right, and the guitars were na 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 na. And then the hipster millennials were just sort of standing around looking. And maybe there was a little swaying going on. Good times. Good times. Okay, Sparky tells me that they are going shopping. This week, he says, my guide is here. Queen of Dragons, here I come. Report on Friday. Oh, well, it looks like Friday on the front porch, which will, of course, be June the 1st, may very well be one for the ages. Will there be a taste testing before the report, Sparky? I think that's what we're all wondering here. So, thanks very kindly. Ralph's just jumped in on Charlene's challenge. There's only $30 to go on that now. And that will take us to $30, and then we're very, very close to fundraising-free radio for the remainder of the month. I prefer it when it's a week's worth, but it's been a weird May. Rusty says, yep, I was confident you'd be here for us. Thank you, Rusty. Thank you. On the other hand, I'm glad you reminded me, Lee, because this is a beautiful moment. Subject line, lawyers. You were talking about how good some lawyers are. Well, some are the opposite and recognized for it. With a headline, Giuliani gets thunderous boos at Yankee Stadium on his birthday. Lee says, but he should not be used to being unpopular, being a Yankees fan growing up in Brooklyn. Still, what better birthday gift for Rudy Giuliani? And you know, in the course of his blathering, people have said, "Well, he's certainly not a very good lawyer anymore." He's not there to be a lawyer. He's there to muddy the water. He's there to stir and create chaos. So that whatever it is that Robert Mueller does, and I think, I mean, my personal opinion is that whatever Robert Mueller does is not going to be good for them. And so consequently, Giuliani's purpose is to inoculate the Trump regime in such a fashion as to make sure that the maggots won't believe anything no matter what, so that they can continue to be a threatening force against any challenge to Trump's power or authority. Oh, that's good news. That's good news. Sparky says, oh, of course, Bob, complete with a shopping list. Hot diggity. Friday on the front porch is going to be a blast. Other things. Darlene reminded me of this earlier, and I had read it as well. Now, every now and then this stuff comes out, and you have to take it all with a grain of salt. Over at The Observer, John Schindler, a former National Security Agency analyst, has made the claim that well before the 2016 presidential election, and certainly during the 2016 campaign, the National Security Agency was well aware what Dishonest Donnie and his crime family were about. Schindler says he was told this by a current senior member of the National Security Agency, and quotes that current member of the National Security Agency as saying, "We knew we had a Russian agent on our hands." Now take a moment to let that settle in. Not, "We knew we had someone improperly influenced by the Russians." Not, "We knew that there had been deep infiltration of the Trump campaign by people affiliated with Russia." Those are both kind of mouthfuls. "We knew we had a Russian agent on our hands." It's a quote. And one is left with the sense that he's not talking about Don Jr. He's not talking about Manafort. The Russian agent he's describing is Donald J. Trump. Further into the article, we find out that the NSA intercepts, who were not spying on Trump, but were in fact doing surveillance on the Russians, because we do that, and they do it to us. NSA intercepts picked up a lot of chatter from Russian government officials about helping Trump's campaign, and Schindler says, quote, "The Kremlin talked about Trump like he was their boy." The NSA official continues and says Trump and his kids knew what they were doing and who they were doing it with. But remember, they also knew they're the smartest people on Earth and would therefore never get caught. But this leads into something that I had meant to talk about, and we've talked about it before, and sometimes I think I've worn the issue out. I mean, look, the Trump criminal enterprise, there is no one and no thing that they would not sell out for some amount of money. The news broke over the weekend that as of May 7th, mere days before Dishonest Donnie would take to the Twitter machine and declare we had to help save Chinese jobs by helping out ZTE, the phone company in China, who has a long history of... remember when Dishonest Donnie was babbling about how China engaged in dirty trade tactics, and how China stole American technology? Well, that's what we've kind of caught ZTE doing time after time after time after time. But just mere days before, what's that new phrase there? Oh, yeah. Just mere days before the gonorrhea Gaddafi twooped that we had to help ZTE, lo and behold, because it's a complete coinky-dinky, precious Ivanka got herself 5 more shiny new trademarks from China. And she's even got a 6th that's under trial approval. Trademark, schmademark, so what? Well, the so what of it is it opens the doors to millions of dollars in profits for precious Ivanka, who, if we're not careful, may eventually wind up, say, long about January the 20th, 2025, as our first woman president. ZTE has had no problem violating sanctions against Iran and North Korea. As long as they paid a $1.3 billion fine, But, son of a gun. Trademarks. Brand new. Fresh. Just like the 3 trademarks she got, hours. Within hours of she and darling Jared having a little sit-down meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping there at the Mar-a-Lago. And that's about the same time that that Geezer Disgustus said, no, they're not a currency manipulator. They're definitely not a currency manipulator. I know. So there's that. There was so much more. There's the fact that the Trump campaign was doing business, and we mentioned this on the program, with an Israeli psychops firm. You remember. Our partners in peace. Yeah, a private Israeli psychops firm that specializes in dirty tricks, right? And lo and behold, they put together an entire campaign for the Nectarine Nero based on a PowerPoint presentation. And in that PowerPoint presentation, the Israeli company bragged about how they could use social media to help the Trump campaign. It's probably just a bunch of liberal rubbish, probably for something like The Guardian or The Washington Post. Nope, that's The Wall Street Journal. Among other things, they talked about being able to make fake news sites and avatar seeding in order to foment discord. They said they could use a pro-Bernie Sanders Facebook group to gin up the burner opposition to Hillary Clinton. Fire up the Bernie or bust bunch. Yep. Now here's the fun part. Robert Mueller's team has a copy of it. The company talked about how bots and bullshit news sites could be were energizing the maggots. And it's just another day. Yeah. Ron reminds us, in case you're not familiar with ZTE, ZTE manufactures Huawei phones. And Huawei phones have an embedded chip that allows the Chinese to access every device at will. They are banned by the U.S. military for this very reason. Here's the other interesting part of that. I'm a gadget nerd, technology nerd of sorts. And I like to read reviews of various and sundry gadgets. I can't afford them, but I like to read them. And I've read no small number of glowing reviews in the past few years of Huawei phones. I guess they missed that whole embedded chip thing. So, with all of that in mind, a deeper conversation about something that Flavio brought to my attention earlier today, and about which we had a substantial back and forth. It's a story from Newsweek, and initially it got Flavio rather wrought. I mean, I don't think Flavio was, like, you know, kicking furniture or anything, but it's the kind of story that can get people disgusted in a hurry and leads to conclusions that aren't necessarily warranted. And it's got a big splashy headline. I'll have to do this in the newsreader voice. Nancy Pelosi says impeaching Donald Trump would divide the country, do more harm than good. What? Oh my God, she's gonna do it again. She's selling us out. Jesus Christ, dear God damn it, dear. Oh, you see how it is with these Democrats? Jesus, DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, DCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCCC The only problem is it makes sense. Isn't the first rule of the art of war, choose your ground? Don't fight on ground that has been chosen by your enemy. You fight on your ground. I think it is. Here's the text. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi may be one of President Donald Trump's favorite targets, but that doesn't mean she's rooting for Congress to impeach the blustery business mogul. During a CNN town hall on Wednesday evening, the California representative said pushing Trump out of office would further divide the country and suggested it could do more harm than good. Pelosi explained to host Chris Cuomo why she wasn't fully behind the idea when presented with polls that showed 70% of Democrats support evicting Trump from the Oval Office. I take it as a responsibility in choosing, prioritizing what is unifying for our country, she said. I've hesitated to use impeachment. I do not think that impeachment is a policy agenda. The Democratic leader, who has sparred with Trump numerous times, suggested that there was a partisan aspect to impeachment talks. She told Cuomo that she was last pressured to impeach President George W. Bush for invading Iraq and that Republicans pushed to throw Clinton out of office. Yes, yes, I remember it well. That time when, for the first time in the history of the Republic, we saw a Senate actually vote to convict and remove a president from office. No, no, that didn't happen, did it? All the millions of dollars that went into the impeachment of Bill Clinton, And what they got was a not guilty that they knew that they were going to get before they gaveled the first hearing into it open in the House of Representatives. But a headline like that really, really lights up the progressive base. God damn it! See these corporate Democrats, son of a bitch! But as a matter of practical reality, in case anybody's run across this and has been doing anything like that, stop it. Please let's not be as dumb as the other side. And I'm not saying Flavio was being dumb. But we have to think about these things. First of all, that thing is written as an inflammatory piece of clickbait. Two, Trump is running around the country saying, if we don't keep the House, and if we don't have to keep the House, they're going to impeach me. They're definitely going to impeach me. Slow in the driveway. But there are realities that attach to this issue. One, it is not a hasty process. So let's assume that we get a House majority, and hey, it's a big one. If we're gonna sit here and fantasize, let's fantasize real good. We get a great big whopping House majority in November. Well, they don't get sworn in till January 2019. Two, then the committee assignments have to be made. Three, then the Judiciary Committee might take up the issue. Or maybe there'll be a special select committee on impeachment. Would not be the first time. Those hearings drag on into way, way up into 2019. But then, oh, frabjous day, Kalu Calais, a bill of impeachment is rendered by the full vote of the House of Representatives. And Donald Trump, by God, finally stands impeached. And then, just as in the Clinton case, it goes over to the Senate of the United States where, hey, we've gotten a Democratic majority too. But it is utterly impossible that we will get a Democratic majority of 67 to 33, which is what you have to have if you want to convict on a bill of impeachment. Got to have 67 Senate votes. And those paragons of anti-Trump criticism, Bob Corker and Jeff Flake, kings of the Parthian shot with the rubber-tipped arrow, ain't gonna be in the Senate anymore. No. There'll be a different brand of wingnut. And so he won't be convicted. And he'll stay in office. And then this country being what this country is, remember, we're not better than that. We are not. This is who we are, the first part of the conversation this evening. This country, or a significant portion of this country, will re-elect Donald Trump just to spite the country. And in the presidential election of 2020, we'll also make goddamn sure that Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer aren't majority leaders or Speaker of the House anymore. Or, let's consider another alternative. Nancy Pelosi says, by God, we've got to impeach this madman. He's crazier than a sprayed roach at a decon party. He's got to go. And I swear by all that's holy, the first thing we'll do when we get the majority is we will impanel an impeachment committee, and we're going to impeach Donald Trump. God damn it. And the progressive corner of the political spectrum, and it is a corner. Remember, they couldn't get Bernie through the primaries, and they, well, damned well couldn't elect Hillary Clinton. But the progressives are going, yay, we're going to impeach Donald Trump, that motherfucker! This is before the election, of course. You know how earlier I said that we weren't marching and that we hadn't been marching in the streets over what was being done to families seeking asylum? Remember, these are not undocumented illegal immigrants. These are asylum seekers, okay? They have a certain legal status. And we haven't been marching in the streets over that. Well, guess what? While all the progressives and the 70% of Democrats who want to see Donald Trump impeached are cheering in the streets, among other things, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Republican Christians will be cleaning their weapons. And they will march in the streets. And they'll goose step. And they'll wear their absolute Sunday best sheets and pillowcases. They'll shine up their knee-high Nazi boots. Get their black uniforms cleaned and pressed. Buy all new tiki torches. Maybe a few of their kids will go and shoot up a few high schools just for kicks. Because the National Rifle Association will issue warning after warning after warning that if they're allowed to take away our elected president and defeat our 2016 vote and steal our votes from us, then by God, the revolution is here. But none of that can happen. Because Nancy Pelosi said, my goodness me, sakes alive, no. Impeachment, that would divide the country. I don't want to divide the country. I want to fix what's wrong. Goodness me, I can't even spell impeachment. It is not anywhere even in my, in what? Peaches, I love peaches. And that way, every time that Donald Trump says, oh, they're coming for me, there's Nancy Pelosi going, you know, we haven't seen any evidence. Because you know what? We haven't seen any evidence. I'll probably get a bunch of emails now saying, God damn it, Bob, you sold out again. Oh, first it was Hillary and you didn't understand that Jill could do it. That ain't what I'm saying. I want him impeached. I want him removed from office. But I think I've just demonstrated that under the best of all possible scenarios, he won't be. He won't be removed from office. He won't be removed from office by impeachment. He's not going to get 25th Amendmented unless Mike Pence hears the voice of God telling him it's time for Donnie to go. Nature is not that likely to run its course. Donald Trump may have a terrible diet, but Donald Trump is wealthy enough that he has access to all the health care he needs to keep him alive. We've kind of got a fixation on not letting presidents die in office. When Garfield got shot, they tried to feed him through his ass. But that was the medical science of the late 19th century. They're not going to do that. And any other possibility, you can't even discuss. The First Amendment goes only so far. So, I would urge you, stop telling us how not to want impeachment, Bob. The other thing is that we have a doctrine, not a law. And there's a significant difference between the two things. We have a doctrine, not a law, that says you cannot indict a sitting president. It's only doctrine. It isn't law. It's not been decided by the Supreme Court. It doesn't exist as a statute. It is merely an administrative guidance within the Department of Justice. But apparently it has the power of fetish around it. It's one of those things that drives me a little bit crazy because when you look at the impeachment clause in the Constitution, as I shared the other night, it includes the words bribery and treason. In capital letters, no less. Well, bribery isn't bribery until bribery has been proven. And so it's, and maybe the Horn Legal Department, namely our buddy Steve in New York and our buddy Billable Rick will disagree. But it seems to me that in order to impeach a president for bribery or treason, you would first have to have a conviction for bribery or treason or other high crimes or misdemeanors. Now, granted, the Republican Congress felt differently in regard to blowjobs. But I think we can forget about hanging our hat on that because they don't feel that way about adultery with porn stars and dirty little payoffs. Apparently, if the whole Elliot Broidy thing plays out, they don't even feel that way about presidents who pay women to get abortions. But it occurred to me that the use of those two terms, bribery, treason, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, three. Ciphering, go figure, sort of puts the lie to the entire idea that you cannot indict a sitting president. But those are all of the alternatives short of not electing him again in 2020. And I don't do things by knee jerk. I actually sit around here, and when I sit around the house, I really sit around the house, thinking about things. You know, I'm no good at fixing car engines. I'm not an expert whittler. I probably should become one. I'm gonna take off a digit. There's a lot of things that I can't do very well, but I do like to think about stuff. You might say that I'm ponderous. That's a self-deprecating joke. And it seems to me that impeaching him at this stage of the process would empower the maggots. Jim says, you're simply being realistic, Bob. And then something else, as far as keeping presidents alive, I was about to mention it, but Jim heard it coming. You know... And I never thought I'd see myself, I never thought the day would come I would say this. But I'm actually beginning to pity George H.W. Bush. That man is being kept alive. Back in the hospital in Maine. That family has always been competitive. Are they trying to keep him alive? Are they trying to make George H.W. Bush outlive Jimmy Carter? You know, there are all kinds of accounts of how competitive that family is, and they'll get in screaming matches over a badminton game, and, you know, it come to blows over the hole on the putt-putt course with the goddamn windmill. Wind turbine, Bob. Thank you, Sparky. I had to. Sparky corrects me every time I say windmill. But it's almost like they won't let him go. And I don't know, maybe George H.W. Bush is maybe he feels the flutter of bat wings around his ears, and maybe there really is a hell, and whatever. He's not dead yet, so I can say that. Nihil nisi bonum and all that stuff. He's not even president anymore, and they won't let him die. And frankly, he's kind of, if you can say this about a Bush, kind of pathetic. As to impeachment, Lee says, impeachment without conviction is useless, or as the Borg would say, futile. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Thank you, Lee. As long as Republicans are slaves to Donald Trump, impeachment means nothing. The Republicans need emancipation before impeachment is a worthwhile endeavor. And you cannot free those who do not wish to be free. Walk up, unlock the chain, take off the manacle. Hold on! What the hell do you think you're going to click? Flavio, who I sense Flavio does not much care for this analysis, and I understand why. Eureka, Bob, I got it. The best we can hope for is running out his clock like they did to Obama, and then he will abolish term limits and run for a third term. Well, see, no. Of all the things that he could do that I would agree with, abolishing presidential term limits would be it. I don't care who's in the Oval Office. It is the ugliest piece of undemocratic constitutional law that we have enacted in the last 100 years. The people of the United States are allowed to impose a term limit on a one-term president. And they can do it at the end of his term. I actually do believe in concepts of democracy, but it's just that we, the people of the United States, have proven not to be particularly good at it. I believe in it because I'd like to see us try it sometime. But no, Trump, cannot abolish term limits because that's a constitutional amendment, and it would require a constitutional amendment striking down the constitutional amendment. That would require 2/3 of the House and Senate and 2/3 of the states to ratify, and that's probably not going to happen by a long shot. But even if it was Trump, I would support the repeal of that amendment. Let's be clear. Taking away a democratic process is no answer to a fit of political pique. And make no mistake, as I have said 100 times before, and Michael in Madison, whose birthday it is today, who I hope is not listening to the program but is instead out and celebrating his birthday, is rather vociferous in his agreement with that assessment. The 22nd Amendment is what we're talking about. No person shall be elected to the office of the president more than twice, and no person who has held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years, but yada, yada, yada. Well, I disagree with that. I also disagree with the idea of term limits in the Congress. You'll notice that was a Republican idea, too, that a few misguided people on the alleged left have gone along with. So, that's just where all that is. If there is, and again, if lightning strikes and unicorns darken the sky flying across, and we get 60, well, we're going to need 69 votes in the Senate because Joe Manchin and Heidi Heitkamp. We get 69 Democratic senators, and we get a great big whopping majority in the House. Sure, let's do it. But is it okay if we don't tell them what our plans are? Is it okay if we don't energize them? Is it okay if, to use a sporting metaphor, we don't provide the requisite bulletin board material for them? Let's let them just celebrate all their maggot victories, like ripping little children from the arms of wailing mothers and making it harder for people to go to the doctor when they're sick and gutting the tax code so that the economy is going to go straight to hell in another five or seven years. Let's let them enjoy their victories, rest on their laurels, maybe get demoralized a little bit somewhere along the way. And then let's do it. Strategy. And so I'm not all beat up, and I'm not quite ready to foam at the mouth over Nancy Pelosi saying she's not thinking nothing about no impeachment. Because the bottom line is Nancy Pelosi is actually a far better strategist than Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan. She can go toe to toe with. She could go toe to toe with Mitch McConnell. And you may rest assured that if she gets a majority in the House of Representatives, there will be a flurry of anywhere from liberal to progressive bills that advance out of that body and go over to the Senate to die. She will do her job because she has a history of doing her job. For all the hand-wringing about what a do-nothing president Obama was that comes out of the alleged left of this country, the fact of the matter is, when Nancy Pelosi was the Speaker of the House, she moved bills through the House. They went over and died in the Senate because Harry Reid permitted Mitch McConnell to assume the duties of his office, and the Democrats in the Senate loved Harry Reid because Harry Reid would never crack the whip over their heads. Sorry, but it's true. It'll be kind of fun if we can get it. It'll be kind of fun to watch her be Speaker of the House. Because they will get busy. And they'll do stuff. And then the Senate. And again, it'd be nice to have 51 votes. 51 Democratic votes in the Senate just to get the majority leadership out of Mitch McConnell's hands. And then we'll find out if Chuck Schumer's as much of a wet noodle as Harry Reid was. Or if he wants to, lead with an axe handle in his hand, the way that McConnell has. You want to? You got to understand. Mitch McConnell is despised by his own caucus because he rules with an iron fist and not even a velvet glove over it. I guess just to put a little bow on all of this, we talked a little bit last week about anachronisms in the Constitution. There is a fair argument to be made that the impeachment clause is anachronistic. In 1787, 13 states, that's 26 senators. And no particularly well-defined parties. I mean, you've got Federalists and Republicans, but there was also some gray areas where the two converged. Let's see, 26 divided by 3, 8 times. So you'd need 17 senators to vote to impeach with the original 13 states. That's a big difference. Getting 13 senators to do something is a lot different than trying to get 67 senators to do something. It's a big difference. And high crimes and misdemeanors is an anachronism. We don't even talk about that. We don't even talk that way in the law anymore. And the law is not known for keeping up or being out in front of the curve linguistically. There are, if you get really down in the dirt with it, there are a lot of anachronisms inside the Constitution. But there's also danger that comes with messing with it. I know people want third-party viability in this country. You want that? You're going to have to get rid of the Constitution, for the most part, in whole, in toto. So we can have a parliament instead of a bicameral legislature. The other possibility is instant runoff voting, but that's not a gimme. California's jungle primary that'll take place tomorrow was put in place to try to give more viability to independent and third-party candidates, and no. Because the money corrupts. And the money will always corrupt as long as the money is allowed to be in the process. So this has pretty much been very nearly a three-hour filibobster. I didn't know who'd be home or who'd be listening this evening. But I'm glad that you were glad that I was here. And I am terribly glad that you were. And we can discuss this some more, and I'm sure we will. Flavio says, okay, I got it now. I think I got it now, but I don't want to see impunity forever. It depends on how you define impunity, Flavio. I'm not even allowed to make reference to certain historical images as far as things that constitute not being impunity. But at this point in time, the best thing that can happen to this country will be getting a majority in the House and Senate in 2018, and then, sweet Jesus, getting rid of Donald Trump in November of 2020. Just my opinion. So here we are. We're all done. I remind folks that there is a $75 challenge on the table this evening, courtesy of Charlene. If it is met and there is $30 remaining of that, then Charlene kicks in another $25. And then, so that's... And then we need $35 to just be done with fundraising and letting me shut up about fundraising for three days, and we'll just have a blast, okay? So the long and the short of it is we need to raise $65 before airtime tomorrow. And if we can just do that, we'll have 3 days of fundraising free radio. Yay! So again, thanks everybody for joining in. Thanks for all you do to make the program happen and keep it on the air. You're the only reason it's on the air. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, as always, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. I hope you had a great holiday weekend and a reflective one. Later, y'all.